first we need to finish last week's topic before we move on to this week's. As I said in the email when I sent out the sheets, the midrash that we're going to do this week, God willing, is actually much more straightforward than the one from last week. So if last week's was a little bit intimidating, this one I think maybe a little bit more straightforward, a little simpler. But let's review what we said regarding last week's midrash, which talked about Noach's righteousness and specifically the term toladot, the generations of Noach. The Midrash offered us three different layers of explanation. The first layer of explanation, which was tied to sentences in Mishle, in Proverbs, talked about Noach's righteousness leading to the survival of the world. And so when the verse says, these are the generations of Noach, Noach is a righteous person, it's because his righteousness guaranteed that there would be future generations. And so that's one, that was one layer. The second layer was more than just survival coming about via Noach's righteousness, but there would also be a flowering of his family via that righteousness. And we talked about also the contrast there between Bayit and Ohel, the house of the wicked, connoting something static, perhaps something with possessions, versus the dynamism of the tent being something that is mobile, something that is temporary, that doesn't indicate an obsession with this world and the material. And then the third point. And the third point took it in an entirely different direction, based on a pasuk from Iyov, from Job, where it talked about the wicked, and it said swift on the face of the water, or we said perhaps cursed on the face of the water, being the wicked, and their sin is that they will not turn to the path of the vineyards, which the Midrash had said that it's actually that they only planted vineyards. That was the language of the Midrash, which was problematic because it seemed to conflict with the sentence in Iyov that we were commenting on. But the Midrash said that all they wanted to do was to plant vineyards. They wanted the fruits. They weren't interested in any sort of serious development of the world. Whereas Noach is tzaddik, Noach is righteous, and he is interested in producing children. That was one way to read that Midrash. We're going to come back to another way soon. But first, I want to look at two other elements within that third part of the Midrash. So if you're looking at your sheet from last time, where the third part of the Midrash, where it quoted the sentence from Iyov, from Job, and it said, "Kal hu al pnei hamayim," the verse began, "he is swift or cursed upon the face of the water." Tikulal chelkasam ba'aretz, their portion in the land will be cursed. So here, the Midrash said, klomar, as if to say, mi shepara midor hamahul, may the one who punished the generation of the flood. And we didn't know what that meant when we read those words. It didn't fit sentence structure. It didn't seem to link back to the text itself. What exactly is this talking about? So here, I refer you to the source that I brought on the second side, source number 4. It's a Gemara in Bava Metzia. It's talking about the situation of someone who reneges upon his word. Someone who enters into a transaction, or I should say commits to a transaction, and then backs out. So, source number 4, Rabbi Shimon Omer. Rabbi Shimon says, Aval pisha amru talis kone dinar zahav, vein dinar zahav kone talis, mikamakom kahalacha. He says, they did say, the sages did say, that transferring a garment, talis in the language of Mishnah, Gemara, Medrash, doesn't mean talis in shul, it means a garment. So even though they said that if you give someone a garment, you acquired the money they were supposed to pay for it, and not vice versa, we're still going to see something else. So I realized as I was saying it, I require one step further back. Technically, from a biblical perspective, Rabbi Shimon believes that if I go to the store, or if I go to someone's house, whatever it is, and I want to buy something from that person, the moment I give the person the money, I have acquired the item that I'm trying to purchase. You paid for it, it's now yours. However, Rabbi Shimon is of the belief that the rabbis changed that. They have the authority to change the way transactions work. It's a principle called Hefker Beisdin that is based on biblical verses, that the sages have the ability to indeed say this, which was owned by so-and-so, is now ownerless or is owned by someone else. It's a longer topic. It's not, we don't need to explore the depths of it right now. But the rabbis came along and said that you don't acquire something when you pay for it. You acquire something when you pick it up, perform some act of transaction to make it yours. Can anybody think of why they would have made that rule? They make the rule in order to protect somebody. Yes, Rena?
The other person might not have accepted the amount that the person gave.
We're assuming everybody's accepting everything. No disagreements involved. Everybody's on the same page. But you want to protect the buyer. Because the fear is that transactions are not always immediate. It isn't always as simple as I walk into the store, I put down the money, and I take the item. Sometimes you buy something on, what do they call it, layaway, right? It's going to be held for a while. In the Talmudic case, they're talking about a farmer who wants to buy grain, but doesn't have the means of storing it. And so he says, I'm going to pay you now for the grain, and I'll take delivery over the course of the season. And the fear is that if I shell out all the money now, I paid you up front, but then I haven't taken delivery, and then a month later there's a fire, and the silo is now in danger where all the grain is being stored, you have no incentive whatsoever to take any measures to protect my grain that's sitting in the silo. You'll say sorry.
So is that like buy something on the internet?
Well, in many ways. In terms of the risk at hand. Well, anytime you order something, yeah.
If it's not in print, but it's going to be published in a week, but they're very clear. They say your account will be charged when you receive the material. So I wonder if there's a Jew in there somewhere.
Well, I think it's also common sense in terms of the way you do orders and deliveries. In other words, and I think it was common sense in that context also. In other words, if you're going to say that the moment you paid for it, then it's yours, and we now have no responsibility for it, you're going to have a lot of dissatisfied customers. And yeah, particularly in terms of an internet order, where you can come back and say, well, how do I know whatever existed? But in terms of this case with the grain, they said, we want to protect the buyer. And so they said that giving the money doesn't acquire the item, but the other way around does, which is if you pick up the item, you are now obligated to pay for it. You can't then say, well, I want to give it back. That doesn't work. That's a legal principle which sets up the discussion here.
That's what's happening with a lot of people who bought condos and have set up yet, and they lost their money because they haven't been built, or they haven't been built the way they wanted to.
There are always problems in doing that sort of a transaction. So take a look at source number 4. Rabbi Shimon says, the rule is, rabbinically, that transferring the garment acquires the money, meaning that once you picked it up, now you have to pay. Whereas giving the money does not acquire the garment. He says, that's the law. However, Aval Amru, Misha Parame Anshe Dor Hamabul, Ume Anshe Dor Haflaga, Ume Anshe Sidum Va Amora, Ume Mitzrayim Bayam, Hu Asili Parami Misha Eno Omeid Bediburo. They have said, we'll see who the they is momentarily, the one who punished the generation of the flood, the generation of the dispersion, that's the Tower of Babel, the citizens of Sodom and Amorah, and Egypt at the sea, he will also punish one who does not stand by his word. In other words, you're going to say, I never promised to go ahead with this. I gave the money, but I could still back out, and you'll be right, technically. But we don't approve of people backing out of their we don't approve of someone backing out of a commitment. And there's actually a statement. This is a curse. It's a curse that's issued by a court where the Beit Din, if the person who was hung out to dry, comes to the court and says, hey, this person did such and such, the court turns to the other person, the other party, and says, you'd better change your ways, or else we are going to invoke this curse. And it is the statement of, God punished others, he's also going to punish this person. And he concludes by saying, "V'hanose v'nosin b'dvarim lokana," someone who interacts verbally, just says, I'm planning on buying something, does not acquire it. V'achozer bo, ein ruach hachamim nochahemenu, but the sages are not pleased with someone who reneges. So it's a general source on keeping one's word. But the point that's germane for us, and what the Medrash was quoting here, is that the sages used as their first paradigm for the one God is going to punish, the generation of the flood. The generation of the flood is the first one on the list as an example for all time of the ones against whom God says, I'm going to punish them for their sins. And so what the Medrash is saying, now we can understand that line in the third part of the Medrash, when the sentence in Eov says, their portion in the land will be cursed, right? Their portion is cursed in the land. It's referring to the fact that they will be held up for all generations as a model for one to be for a curse. In other words, when the court wants to warn people against being untrustworthy, not living up to their word, the court's going to invoke them. Even though we don't consider that to have been the sin of the generation of the flood. Right, their sin, we tend to assume, is taking things by force. That's what's identified in the Torah. So it isn't quite the same. Nonetheless, their name will be identified with a curse historically. That's the that's what the Medrash is pointing to here. We clear?
No, is curse interchangeable with punishment?
Well, this isn't a punishment. This is, in later generations, they're going to say that someone else will meet the fate like they met. It's a curse of which invokes them as a model. It's not about a punishment. I think that's exactly what the Medrash is picking up on. The Medrash is saying, this sentence in Eov uses the word tikulal, that their portion should be cursed in the land, and we don't really know what that means. And so the Medrash is saying, you know what? It's referring to the fact that even down through the ages, thousands of years later, people are going to invoke them as a curse. That one who does something bad will suffer their fate.
It's not really a demarcation.
Yeah. Agreed. Agreed. So that's what the Medrash is doing, is the Medrash is trying to explain that odd word, tikulal. That's what this is all about, this word tikulal in the sentence in Eov. So looking at this third part then,
Is it like saying remember Amalek?
In a manner of speaking, yes. Yeah. With Amalek there's a different motivation for the memory. But yeah. So that's the third piece here. Okay. What we have then is a Medrash with three different parts. We've seen the different parts, but I want to come back to these grapevines. I already did in the first moments of the class, but I want to see if we can do better with these grapevines. Again, we said the verse itself that we're quoting from Eov curses them, apparently because they don't turn to the vineyards. The Medrash says that they only turn to the vineyards. They're not looking to develop things. They're only looking at the vineyard. So the Eitz Yosef commentary to this Medrash says, you know, Midrashim are a funny thing. They don't only appear in one location. Quite often you will find a text in a Medrash that will appear in one body of Medrash and then another body of Medrash, and may well appear in the Babylonian Talmud and may also appear in another form in the Jerusalem Talmud. This is not strange, because remember, it's a verbal tradition, and the verbal tradition gets canonized in different works. You know, imagine if you had a family story, right, that, you know, great Aunt Susie used to tell. And then Great Aunt Susie has a whole bunch of nieces, nephews, grandchildren, whatever. And when they write their records of the family history, they all record the story. So what you have here is not necessarily in terms of a story, but you have a tradition that's being passed down. And at one point, a group of sages collects it in Talmud. Another time, they collect the tradition, laws, stories, whatever it is, in a certain body of Medrash. And they're all going to quote this lesson. So we shouldn't be surprised by seeing something appear in more than one place. But sometimes the manuscripts have slight changes. Surprise. The Etz Yosef says, is one of those cases. And he says that shouldn't surprise us either. Because we have already seen, we've discussed the fact that there was scribal error over time in transcribing manuscripts. It's one of the things that makes learning Medrash very challenging. And the answer is, in fact, one of the texts is right and one of the texts is not right. And the Etz Yosef contends that here, this is not about different interpretations where they can both be right. It's simply a matter of different manuscripts. And the Etz Yosef says here, our version of the Medrash is actually incorrect. The version of the Medrash that appears in the Yerushalmi in a volume called Yevamos is the correct edition, which makes sense. And in this edition, instead of saying that the people there only planted vineyards, it's that they did not plant vineyards. Noah planted vineyards, they didn't plant. They were not interested in planting, working the land, producing for the future. Only Noah was interested in planting, growing things, producing for the future. And that fits the sentence in Eov. It fits the idea of the Medrash very well. So the idea is that when we ask the question, why does it say these are the generations of Noah? Noah was tzaddik. We're saying that he is tzaddik in that he produces for the future. Whether it's in terms of children, which was the first read, or whether it's in terms of planting vineyards, which is the second read. That's the idea. Yes, Rivka.
What is the meaning of a vineyard in the society of that time? A basic meaning of vineyard. What does it represent? What is it a symbol of?
Excellent. So that brings me to the next point, which is... Which is the way you take this medrash is going to influence the way you take the sentence that I brought you in source number 5. This is from after the flood. After the flood, we are told, Vayachel Noach Isha Adama Vayita Karem. Right? Noach comes out of the Teva, out of the ark. He brings an offering to God from the animals. God is so impressed that Noach has learned to give something of his own to somebody else, granted that God doesn't need it. But the generous impulse, which is so lacking in society pre-flood, has suddenly been demonstrated. God says, okay, I'm not going to destroy the world again. And he says, look at the rainbow. The rainbow is a symbol of my commitment that I'm never going to destroy the world again. Not that he's creating rainbows for the first time then, but rather he's simply saying, look at that you see that rainbow in the cloud. That will always be your reminder. That's why many commentators take that story. But the point is that after that, when Noah has demonstrated the spiritual high point, he goes out, he plants a vineyard. He drinks from the wine, he becomes drunk, and that whole story with his kids happens after that. It's not a high point in terms of what happens in the rest of the story. The question is, where was the mistake? Was the mistake planting the vineyard, or was the mistake drinking the wine and becoming intoxicated? So you can take it in two different ways, based on what we're saying now. If you take a look at the sentence carefully, Hebrew speakers will particularly appreciate this. You could actually go two different ways. Look at the sentence in source number 5 again, please. Vayachel Noach ish ha'adama vayita karem. I translated that as, and Noach, man of the earth, began and planted a vineyard. Which word in the Hebrew means began? Vayachel, like hitchil. Tchila, lechatchila, a beginning. That's one way you could take vayachel. According to that reading, that translation of it, Noah set out, he began, and he planted a vineyard. And in fact, what it looks like he's doing is trying to repopulate the world. This is a positive. This is a continuation of what he was doing before the flood. Noah is trying to have toladot. He's trying to get the world going. And everything has been destroyed. He's now going to get things going again. That's one way to look at it. In which case, his mistake wasn't planting, his mistake was drinking. That's one way to take it. The other way, though, that you could take it, is the way Rashi takes it. You see Rashi in source number 6? He takes it differently. He says, Asa Atzmo chulin. He says the word vayachel is associated with chol, mundane. Right? Like being kodesh lachol, between the sacred and the mundane. Asa atzmo chulin. He made himself mundane. Shahaya lo laso tchila benetia acheres. He should have involved himself in another kind of planting first. Rashi doesn't criticize him for planting. He criticizes him for planting grapevines. And Rivka, to go back to your question, the grapevine has a negative connotation. It's drunkenness. Now, we have that tension in general in Judaism, because on the one hand, we use the fruit of the grape for our most sacred occasions, right? In order to show that the occasions are special. You have a bracha on wine at a wedding, you have a bracha on wine at a bris, you have a bracha on wine at a pidyon haben. We use the wine after Birkat HaMazon as part of the blessing after meals. The Kiddush, of course, on Shabbos and Yom Tov, Havdalah, we use it and demonstrate holiness with it. But on the other hand, the Kohen who's going to go serve in the Beis HaMikdash in the temple is not allowed to drink wine first. Right? We are concerned about the impact of the grape. There's a general tension about this. And so the question that we have to address regarding Noah is, was planting the grapevine a good thing, or was planting the grapevine a bad thing? And in fact, depending on which version you take in our Medrash, you will have a different answer. Either they were wrong for not planting grapevines, and Noah was right for planting grapevines, and you plant them and it's a good thing, or they only wanted to plant grapevines. They were only interested in getting drunk, and Noah, on the other hand, was interested in perpetuating the world and in having children and so on. So it really depends on which way you look at this.
Is this the first time that he's called Isha Adamah?
I believe so. So what we have here are three approaches to how we understand the link between tzaddik and toladot, why the Torah actually describes him being tzaddik when it's talking about his generations. The first two, that his righteousness led to survival, or his righteousness led to flowering, or then this very interesting third read, his righteousness was in his attempt to perpetuate the world. Whether that means through children or whether that means through grapevines, depending on how you read what went on there. By the way, you have the same tension regarding the word vayachel in a related word, huchal, when it talks about the generation of Enosh, and it says, az huchal likro b'shem Hashem, which some read as, then they began to call in the name of God, or, alternatively, then it became mundane to call in the name of God because they began worshipping idols. So you have other associations with it. I didn't bring it on your sheet because I didn't see a need to confuse things still further. But, I'm just doing it out loud. Okay, all of this is the continuation from last time. Now we have a brand